I'm Miles Kupeka, the big, big dreamer. I'm a gastronomist, restaurateur, and entrepreneur. Born and raised in Soweto, I've simmered and steamed my way to success. I'm on a mission to find out if there's a recipe for entrepreneurial success. What's that secret ingredient that makes people stand apart from the crowd and build their own businesses?
I'm very excited to start our first podcast with Semi Mohali, who is a founder and an amazing food creative who's come up with a very cool brand. Semi, tell us about it. What is the product?
Thank you so much for having me. I produce and manufacture a product called Skyroll Twist. It has two flavors, which is apple and the twist of peach, as well as red grape with a twist of blueberry. We literally create beverages that are cool.
Where did it all start? You know, your background. Where did you grow up? Where did the spark happen?
So I grew up in Tembisa. I'm from Tembisa. I went to school in Tembisa. There's quite cool people that are from Tembisa.
Eastern.
Of course, you know it. We rule. I started my entrepreneurial journey at the age of 14. Mm. At the age of 14, I was already selling ice cream on the street of Tembisa. And mainly it was because of the need in our family. I come from a family of 8. So before you can have a pair of shoes in my family, you have to wait for quite a while before it's your 10, you know? Mm. So my dad was the only one working, and the only way for one to fend for himself was to literally find a way, which is when I started to sell ice cream on the street of Tembisa. When the bars started to be a fashionable thing to sell ice cream, where everybody was getting into the market, it was time for me to move on. I then started to sell, let's get it out of the way, because they stink, chickens.
Right.
Not a pretty cool one, because I had a pretty much tough time with my peers at the time, you know.
Because you always smell the chicken.
That's it, you know. I never had an opportunity to go out, and you had to literally skin those chickens, because you have to, you know, present an offering to the consumer. You know, give them an option whether they want it alive or...
So you would boil them so to get the feathers off, right?
You would, yeah.
That stinks.
You would. Thanks. You would. And I had a pretty much tough time with my peers. And for quite a while, I didn't have much friends, you know, because I didn't have time to join them when we're doing cool things, or I didn't have time to go to the movies, you know. I've always been the busy one on weekends. I mean, I had only Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Right.
And Sunday was normally short for me, because my parents were pretty much strict on, you have to be done by at least 2 o'clock so that you can get yourself ready for school the following day.
Mm.
So there was no time for me there.
What did you do with the money?
Money was well spent. Trust me on that. I was cool at school in terms of how I look, because I wanted to make sure that I can buy myself shoes, can buy myself that shirt that I wanted. I can buy books for myself, you know. And that money got me a long way.
You would say that the actual journey of entrepreneurship for you, it wasn't an option. It started so young. It was something you just had to do. You didn't think about it. It was just organic, I guess.
It was, you know. I think it's one of those things when you are put in a corner, you know, you literally think, how do I get out of this corner? How do I defend myself? Do I have to wait 4 months before I get a pair of shoes, or do I find a way to literally buy that pair of shoes in the right way, you know? And in those days, you literally have your part-time jobs. You can either have a part-time job, even now you still have those, but you can have your part-time job, or you can have a business that you run.
Yeah.
And my business then, it was, you know, selling chickens. Mm. One of the key things for me was seeing how my siblings would be so in pain to wait for something. You know, I was in that same pain, but you just
had a bit of control.
You just want to control the environment that you're on. And I think one of the cool things that I used to enjoy on Sunday, I would go and buy a briar pack and present it. This is my money. I bought a briar pack.
And everybody chows.
I used to enjoy that.
Yeah.
I really did.
Do you have regrets, though? Do you think you missed out on a childhood of playing ama ali, ama top, or like just being like a normal kid and not knowing better while you were hustling and
everybody think else when, was chilling? When that happens, you don't know what is normal, you know?
Fair enough.
And when you grow up in that environment, you don't know what is normal until you grow up, you look back.
Mm.
And when you grow up and you look back, you can either take that information and be depressed and start crying, why did I not have, you know, these cool gadgets? Why did I not have this time and so on? Or you can take that moment or that period in your life and learn from it and transfer it to another human being who might be going through the similar, you know, situation.
Right.
And there's no point in crying, you know, over a spilled milk.
I found most entrepreneurs spend most of their energy on the solution. They don't romanticize the problem. And I think you've just echoed that part, is that, you know, it was what it was, essentially. Mm. Would you put your kids through the same circumstance for character and growth? Or do you think, you know, now that you are a successful business person, you know, each generation should get better and easier?
Each generation should just see how they get out of it for themselves. I'm joking.
Oh, are you though?
I'll never do that to my kids. Look, I think entrepreneurship is one of the beautiful things, but for me, it has to be very organic for them.
Yeah,
it's not something that I have to force it to them.
Mm.
But at the same time, I want them to be one step ahead of me. I don't want them to go through what I've been through.
Mm.
Hence why I'm working hard now. So for them, they have to look at where we are now and transfer it to their generation and learn from that. As to whether they will be entrepreneurs today or tomorrow, it will be one of those God-given moments where you have to seek and just look at their given talent,
right,
without you forcing it and say you have to be an entrepreneur. I mean, there's many careers that they can choose from, but I also do know that, you know, a positive spirit rubs on. The good chance of them being entrepreneurs is pretty much 90, you know, because of what they see around the house and what they see. They might not see the difficulties that I'm going through at times when I'm running my business, but they will probably see daddy's on TV, daddy's doing a speech, daddy's running his business. You know, that's what they see, you know. And what I do with my son when we do promotion, he's got his little t-shirts. I'll take him to a promotion because I want him to start thinking that entrepreneurship is not about the glitz and glamour.
Mm.
It's about getting your hands dirty, understanding your business. And that's where the key is. Getting their hands dirty, that it does not necessarily mean that you neglect part of your business. It simply means that when you understand your business from the bottom to top. So that's what he needs to understand.
And with that, so he at least has you as an inspiration, but who inspired you? I mean, you were in the East Rand by yourself and you figured this out and you said, look, I'm going to start selling chickens to earn some money. But who inspired you?
So my uncle used to have a couple of taverns in Tembisa as well as in Katlehong.
Mm-hmm.
He was pretty cool.
Mm.
I used to admire him, how he would literally run his businesses. And at the time, it was not even about entrepreneurship for me. It was my uncle, he's a businessman. He's making so much money. He's doing well for himself. And for that reason, my cousins, they've had to endure the benefit of that, you know?
Yes.
And looking back now, I'm like, this is what I want for my kids, you know? And he used to be a great inspiration for me.
Mm.
And not only that, he has done well. The sight of him organizing the business, it was truly, truly amazing. At the time, everything was written down, your books, you know? It was manual.
Yes.
And how he has run his business, it was really much amazing.
So then it is true that the stories have to be told because people need to get inspired from someone, somewhere. You know, there's no self-made anybody because at some point you saw someone and you thought to yourself, I want to be that guy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the key is you just don't know when it happens, you know. You just somehow like something about that guy.
Right.
And that thing, you start to follow it and you follow the trail.
But did you know at some point what you wanted to be? You know, like every kid wants to be a fireman or something.
Yeah.
Like, was there something specific that you wanted to be?
I was one of the lost ones. I didn't. I was one of the lost ones.
Yeah.
I didn't even have a clue. My dad used to say to me, you have to be a motor mechanic. Right? And that's what I picked up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as a result, when I finished school, I did engineering motor. I worked for BMW.
Right.
And 2 years later, I found myself so lonely and depressed working for a company that makes cool cars, but I'm not happy.
Right.
You know, then I said, okay, what do I do? Then I resigned and I went back to school. So during that period as I'm going back to school to learn marketing psychology now, I'm not telling my dad this because I know how he's going to flip.
Yeah, he's going to kill you.
One, he has put money aside for me to go to school. So my duty was to prove him wrong that I've actually put money aside and I've went back to school. This is the results of that.
Mm.
So I went to school. I'll wake up in the morning just like anybody else who's going to work. And I've done that for like a year. Then I came back and I said, this is what I've done. We didn't speak for quite a while because he could not understand why I'm so unhappy and unsettled about working for a company that is, you know, so big, you know. But now you look at what I've done. It's now translating to what I'm doing today.
Right.
You know, and education plays a big role in an entrepreneurial journey. I mean, 3 years back, I've had to go back to Vets Business School to continue to learn and to continue to catch up because the industry changes so much and so fast. And as an entrepreneur, if you're not literally closing the gap of the learning part and you're focusing on the one single side of running the business, you'll find that later on in the years, you are missing something.
And you know, for me, that's in my intro, I mentioned the education side as a key role player into the entrepreneurial ecosystem.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to Stanford to investigate why education is so important into the entrepreneurial landscape. It's the weirdest thing. As soon as you arrive in Stanford, you can feel your IQ go up by 2 basis points. I mean, it's amazing. It's just like a beautiful campus. But what struck me about the campus or just the whole thing about being in the Bay Area was that not only do the kids go to Stanford, when they become successful, they take that money and reinvest it back into their alma mater, which is in this case the college they went to, Stanford, and it's a self-fulfilling ecosystem. So, or they come back and fund some of the startups that are being made from there, or they build labs.
Yeah.
But the essence is they invest back into the education side because they realize how important education was for their success.
Mm.
And you've just echoed the same thing. You're saying, you know, it's cool as it is being an entrepreneur, but education and learning is what sets you apart.
Look, I think the key point there is the seed.
Mm.
You know, the seed part of it is you can either go to school and learn as much as you can and transfer it back to your business. Let me tell you what I'm doing now for my kids.
Mm.
Right? They've got cool boxes that I've transferred into a 45% investment, a 15% for charity, because I want them to understand that you have to be nice to others. You have to be very charitable, you know? And then they also have an entertainment allowance.
Right.
They also have to have a spiritual box, whether you call it tithe, whether you call it whatever you believe in, you know? What am I doing there? I'm literally putting a seed for them to understand that as they grow back, they will go back to those ways, you know?
Right.
You're teaching them life skills where as you grow up, you're going to have to pay bills. You're going to have to pay 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Mm.
You're not getting the 100 rand and literally spending on yourself.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
Same thing. When you are an entrepreneur, when you invest in yourself, it's almost like a seed where one day you will want to wonder, where is that tree? I put a seed there.
But Sam, I've got a question on that. And it bothers me because I think those guys in the education system are the ones that are letting us down. I've got the biggest bone to chew with them, I guess.
Yeah.
It's because you and I were never taught entrepreneurial or personal finance or all these things you're teaching to your kids, right? It's just assumed, you know, that we're going to learn it somewhere by osmosis. But I never went to start 101. I was never taught how to start anything. I was never taught how to manage and how many degrees and none of that, right?
Yeah.
So how do we fix that? Because you figured it out in some shape or form for yourself, and now you're imparting it to your kids. But how do we make it such that Uthemba noSipho have exactly that same access that you now have discovered?
Look, for me, it's literally try to reduce the people that are failing so much, you know? You can look at it as me and you have gone through quite a bit. How do you then fix for the next generation not to go through that? I had to figure it out. You know, nobody taught me how to do things within the ecosystem, right? Mm. You literally pick it up. So what that does is you literally increase a rate of businesses that are going to fail.
Yeah.
You know, hence why today you have the word failure being glorified, that you have to fail in your early age stages in your business.
Mm.
But I would like to be controversial on that. I would rather have a business that is solid from the
get-go
onset on, you know, that is running and flying. By the time that the business is 10 years odd, you know, the entrepreneur is now discovering themselves rather than you fail and you fail and you fail and you fail. And then you're in so much pressure in your late 20s to literally making it.
And you might quit.
And you would, because the pressures of life, you know, it's almost like ladies, when they get to their 30s, they get so much pressure into, do I have to get married? Do I have to have kids and so on?
Mm.
That's the ecosystem of the business. And part of that is we don't have institutions that literally support, you know, what needs to be supported in terms of entrepreneurship. Everybody has now, what do you call it, an ED program, you know? But what it is
enterprise development,
cool building where you can have coffee and literally have
Wi-Fi internet. And that's it. Yeah. Yep.
You know, and what struck me about your system, Wakanda, was that you're not only looking to have that. You literally want to have the practical people must be part of this thing.
Right.
This system where they come in and literally learn to cook and learn how to make a drink and learn to be something else that they want to be. What that does is that literally train a person from that moment that literally I can literally make my mistakes from that environment.
In a safe environment, yeah.
You know?
But on that though, I mean, if I go back one step, I just think, you know, you going to school and studying and you've left a very cool job. I must have taken some serious balls to do that and go tell your dad that, you know. And that's also what I've discovered to be a very interesting trait with most entrepreneurs is that the other one would have been a simple path. It would have been comfortable. You would have had air-conditioned offices, right?
Of course.
You'd be in Stuttgart right now. But there you are. You go tell your dad after you've studied and you paid for it that this is the path you've decided.
What it is it's an issue of a human being on a plate of being an evolver, you know, and I'm a great believer of you have to have a minimum education. You must have your matric. And from there, you know, you either take a gap year and discover yourself because not everybody that goes through an ecosystem of education, they will understand the guidance of picking the right careers.
Right.
You know, I've picked a career, but I'm not even implementing that today, you know. So as a human being, you evolved as well as an entrepreneur.
I believe that.
And there shouldn't be so much pressure of you have to pick now what you need to do.
And I think even if you do pick, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean because you studied something you must die
you
in
must
a career.
Implement.
You know,
it.
I mean, I
you
left in a systems engineer background to become a chef, you know? So, but why do you find that people get stuck in the 9-to-5 rigmarole, going to a job they hate and sit in traffic for an hour and a half to speak to a boss they don't like. Why do you think they stick it through and the likes of you say, nah, you know what, your life, you're not a passenger in your life. And
when you're not in touch with your peppers and when you are not bitten by your peppers, you're sort of like stuck in that circle. And you have to be a key player in order to start winning things. So the moment you continue to be a spectator from outside, you could never be involved.
Right.
So you got to be a player to start to win things.
So
what normally happens with most people is I'm outside and I'm very comfortable. Somebody brings me popcorns while I'm watching this beautiful game and I'm guarantee of my seat and I'm comfortable. That is my life.
Right.
But they on the other hand, they're very miserable.
Yes.
And they are not literally knocking down to find out their key purpose and connect to that, to their destiny, and start to run with it. And big part of that is the salary. I find that a salary is one biggest enemy that literally stopping a growth of a human being.
Right.
Me and you have survived without salaries, especially when we start our business.
Barely survived.
Correct.
Yes. let's call a spade a spade.
But you find ways to make it happen. You find a way to start where you are.
Right.
You know, you don't literally die. Mm. And you connect with your purpose. When your purpose is a self-driver, you've got nothing to fear.
You've always have energy in the tank.
That's it.
But someone said to me that entrepreneurship is a calling. And you know, I was like, that's like a bit far-fetched. But then when you think about it, it's actually true, because it makes no sense, right? Yeah. Why would you work 80 hours a week so that you avoid working 40 hours?
Yeah.
It's like, it makes no sense. And it's painful, it's hard, you know. And I think maybe that's a key part that I want to explore next, is that most people think entrepreneurship is a walk in the park because they see the end aspects and the trimmings, but it actually is hard. And what did you pick up in your journey? What were some of the, I mean, I hate this question when I get asked, like, what was like the tough challenges in your life? Because there's so many, but you don't focus on them because you're focusing on solutions, right? But maybe just, you know, on that topic, give us some of your thoughts.
I think the whole ecosystem, it's a challenge on its own. Mm. Because when you, especially coming from a township, when you've never taught anything of some sort like an entrepreneurship, that on its own becomes a challenge. You have to learn. You have to start to implement and learn as you go.
Mm.
But the biggest issue is access to funding. Mm. You know, you also have challenges. How do you grow your business? How do you market your business? And the biggest enemy in our market is those blue chip companies.
Mm.
As you are starting your business, they undermine you quite a bit. Mm. You know, I've had to knock to one retailer for 2 years.
I love this story. Please, do share.
Knocking and seeing the same guy presenting the same product and saying, look, this is our product. It tastes cool. Try it. We want it in your shelf. And he will say, go and change this and so on. And then you present the same product next week. The only thing you've changed is the lid. The guy literally complained about the taste. You're presenting the same product. Then he says, it tastes better. You know, can you just reduce the sugar? But that's the same product. So what that does is it's about who you are and who you connected to, the people that you know.
So, but you also went back for a year and a half.
I did, yeah. Because I refused to let the door to be closed on my face.
But
you know?
A year and a half, that's a long time.
You know what it is for me? I honestly believe if you cannot connect with people as an entrepreneur, there's no way you're going to make it.
Mm.
If you can't find a way to connect with people, it doesn't matter. You can have the most beautiful product or presenting the most beautiful service, you're never going to open those
desks. But speaking on the connection on that particular story, you mentioned to me that he was communicating to you in Afrikaans. And please share that story.
So the interesting part was I will send him an email and then he will reply in Afrikaans. I have zero understanding of Afrikaans. So I would have to literally copy and paste and put on Google.
Google Translate.
Just to understand. What are we talking about here? And I literally got fed up. And I got to a point where I was like, okay, this guy, he has to give me business or he doesn't. So I then went and I said, okay, look, how would you feel if I try and reply in Zulu or in Tswana? Or how's this going to feel? Are we starting a new relationship or are we not? Let's be clear, because there's no point that we literally go and travel this journey, but you literally know you're not going to take our product. And from that moment going forward,
it felt like
something got lifted off my shoulder.
Mm.
And it changed the whole dynamics.
Mm.
Because now he realized, actually, he's not literally here to beg, which is one of the biggest weakness of entrepreneurs. They think, I've got the product, I've got the service, therefore I have to beg to get the business. You shouldn't beg if you've got the good product or service. You should let your product speak for itself. and you're literally backing it up with your personality, with your connecting with that particular person that you're trying to sell your product to.
So then you tell your dad, and then you leave to the UK.
Mm.
What's that all about?
It was a frustration of trying to match the previous job that I had in terms of salary,
right,
and getting different offers. But I'm like, they gave me a car, you know, give me a car. So I'm literally going back. And in my mind was, I'm literally dropping the standard.
Yeah.
Up until I saw a job advertised in London, and I just applied for the job. I've never been to London. I knew nobody. And I'm getting into this plane, and the condition was you need to pay for your own flight, get into London, and as soon as you're here, we'll just reinvest your fees, and they take care of everything, your accommodation and so on. It's almost like you're migrating, but they pay for the whole full package. Got to London, and I'm working for Quantum Marketing, and I'm the junior there, and I'm having the time of my life. It was very strange to see a city that doesn't literally sleep. You literally go shopping at 9 o'clock, at 10 o'clock. You know, everybody's still, you know, awake and literally selling. But, you know, the funny thing that I learned in London was how technology moves so fast and how they start to think about what will happen in the next 20 years before, you know, everybody else can do, you know. And I remember walking into one of these cool retail that opens 24 hours, and they didn't have anything in there. They just had the pictures on the walls of the product. All you did was to scan the product on the wall, and you put it in the basket, and you choose the date of when you want the delivery to be sent. And what that is talking to those guys that are busy. They have no time to do their shopping. And they rely on those type of a system. They knew exactly who we're targeting, you know? And I thought that was really cool. And it started to bug me that, you know, I'm abroad. What am I bringing home?
Right.
You know, what would be that? Then the pressure started to boil in that, you know, I have to have something that I'm bringing, you know, to show that I was abroad.
Mm.
And the pressure of your peers as well, what it is that you're going to do when you come back. Then eventually World Cup is coming to South Africa. And that was 2009 when I realized that, okay, look, in South Africa, you're going to have everybody fighting for one big pie, which is the, you know, your B&B, hospitality sector, you know, the hotels. Everybody's going to start their own B&B. Everybody's going to start their own hotels. Mm. You know, they're going to transfer their homes to accommodate these visitors. But for me, it was, I know people will sleep somewhere, and while they're there, they want to consume a product. But why would I bring a product that does not speak to change or innovation? You know, that's when the twist came in that, okay, how do I implement what I've learned abroad and create a product that will be cool and will take on the international market?
So then you come back and South Africa's a buzz, there's energy, and you think to yourself, hang on, I've got some pounds, I'm going to start a business making a very cool beverage.
Yeah.
That was a business plan, essentially.
Not even a business plan.
Mm.
It was literally about trying to fit the need, you know, of the visitors that are coming in. And it was going to be a platform, and that I'm going to, you know, supply.
Right.
And that's it. Little did I know that, you know, people will want to demand the product after the World Cup has long gone.
Right.
You know.
So how did it actually practically start? Because, I mean, I've read a lot of books on entrepreneurs and startups, but by the time they write the book, they're like old, and they make it like it was easy, because I don't think they can remember. And besides, if it's your book, you tell people what you know, what you want to tell them. It's your book, right? But I want practical, real challenges. And what did you do? You're here.
So
what now?
I'm writing a book as well, by the way. And for me, it's the right to war. If you understand your backyard and you are able to fight the war, right? So the thing about the challenge that I had was, I've created this product. I used to supply the hotel industry with a 25 liter. But now the challenge is, how do you then...
Wait. Yeah. But, okay. Why a drink? Other than that, you thought people need to eat. Yeah. Like, how did you come to the part, like, have you made drinks before, prior to
never,
this?
Like, never.
So give never. Me the stuff.
Like, so the reason why it's a drink, remember when the visitors are coming, they want to consume something.
Right.
Whether it's a beverage that or is food. Alcohol or non-alcoholic. So that was that for me. So then I started to supply these retailers. And it was only 25 liter, right? And if you make a product or, you know, you create a service that is out of your heart, whether you've meant for it to be a business or not, people would demand it. That's a bottom line.
That's why your mom's food always tastes good.
That's it. That's why even today you have a lot of people who say, I'm turning my family recipe into a, you know, a product. That was that for me. And it was a platform that I've created. Then the hotel services are now saying, the people that have spent a night here, they want the product. I'm now having to spend.
So you were just mixing this thing by yourself. It was just you found
it was
some ingredients.
It was pretty much easy because I was doing it in my kitchen, you know? 25 liters. I'm buying my juice from Cape Town when I arrive in a concentrate.
That's the stuff I want. Yes. You know?
Then I'm mixing all these ingredients together.
And you've got no food background. So if someone comes to me or you and says, oh, but you know, you need a skill set, you need capital, you need... You had none of that. You literally just thought there's a gap. As I think you said, there was a need that you needed to feed.
Correct. So it's a need that you want to feed, but at the same time, also the hunger to learn, right? To get out of your comfort zone, to learn new things. And to also see and understand that you can see the dream. Because once you've literally provoked this demand and now people are talking about it,
right.
Even if it's like three hotels, but you know you're onto something, you know, then I started to say, okay, how do I then formalize this, you know, product? So I'm now going back on a journey of an 18 months learning how to mix it properly before I can literally introduce it into the market.
Right.
And before I can even introduce it into the market, I had to test the market. So I'm spending 18 months learning different types of flavors, understanding what tastes better with what. And 18 months down the line, I've got a product that I'm putting it in a glass bottle. Now I'm literally putting a group of people in one room and say, guys, taste this product. And one of the biggest enemy that we have as entrepreneurs, we want to be gloating and telling them it's my product. So I didn't tell them it's my product. Because I wanted the best opinion coming from that, you know, research. So I've had the pregnant women, I've had the colored people, I've had black people, I've had white people. So what it does is we all have different tastes and palates. You know, you want to be able to identify whether this is high in terms of level of sugar. You've got a lot of preservatives that were there at the time. We've had to reduce it because people can pick them up, you know. Does this react to a person who's pregnant, you know? So all of that information took me to another level of introducing it properly and formally as a can model.
Right.
And introducing it to the retailers. But when it comes to the education of understanding the flavors.
Because your beverage is an interesting one because it's apple-based, but with the twist of...
Peach.
I think you're saying you're working on some more flavors as well. So, and that's the part I like. It's more bespoke. It's not what the usual suspects sell kind of thing. And how is it doing?
So I like what you've just said, right? And when you're saying that, it actually makes me even more put a stamp into my mind that I'm actually a creative, not literally somebody.
Yeah.
I'm actually a creative.
You're making crafts.
You know?
So, soft drinks, essentially.
Correct.
Yeah.
So the other stuff that, you know, your accounting, your structure, your literally your controls, they come in as part of and parcel of running a business. But you literally have to identify your true core strength as an entrepreneur. And we've introduced the product that was 2005 into the retailers. And the first retailer that allowed us to have that platform, which was Spa. And I remember putting all these cases, our first order, and I used to travel to Nelspruit literally twice a week. And it was so much of a buzz for me to see the product on the shelf for the first time. And I couldn't believe it that a guy from Tembisa can literally have a product
on shelf.
On shelf.
Right.
You know? And I would literally do everything. Your install test, you know, your feedback and
your
so
merchandising.
On. And that's where you understand your consumer. We've done merchandising, we've done driving, we've done everything. But when you look back in terms of packaging the business, it gives you a good background of understanding your business. And you know what the consumer wants, because why? You've worked down on the ground level with the consumer and you've allowed them to test the product and literally tell you whether it's rubbish or not, right in your face.
And that's hard, eh, to
accept. That is hard to take in, you know? Yeah. Because when we started, we've had a lot of consumers saying, I don't like it. What's the change? You know, I like the old one that I'm, you know, because people, they become very structured and loyal to what they used to.
I always think people don't know what they want. They like what they know, you know, so you're always having to spend more energy to get them over their hump till they know you, and then they like you because they know you. Yeah.
You're right. You know, it's very tricky in terms of the mind of a person, whether they like something today or tomorrow. And what we've done, we've developed different types of flavors where a consumer can have a choice, you know, because we clearly understand that a consumer changes all the time. And how do you fit into their need as well as their choice? You know, you have to offer them different variant. And at the same time, you need to be able to share your story, because people connect to the story more than anything.
Yes.
They know if you're selling, you know, a product that is not going to go anywhere, or you're selling them rubbish.
Because it's inauthentic, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, that's a consumer. And I just believe that a consumer in 2020, it's a smart consumer that knows what they want. They are not the consumer that will be taken for granted.
And they'll tell you when you suck. They've got many platforms to tell you that you suck, right?
I think that's the beautiful thing about as an entrepreneur. When a person tells you that your product is rubbish, that's where you identify your strength as an entrepreneur, whether you can cry about it and you can literally try to win over that consumer, or try to put that consumer or that customer to a fan club.
Yes.
And I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
We introduced the product, and the following year we've had one of the most challenging customer we've ever had in one of the retailers. And the incident literally took us into a journey into understanding our consumers, and also to understand how do we react to these things when a consumer is not happy. Because you will find a consumer that's not happy. Thinking about it now, I'm more friends with that lady than when she was blowing and was like, what are you going to do for me? Your product tastes not as promised as you've said into your, you know what I mean? And she was screaming on a shop floor. And you will get situation like that, because when you produce on a high level and volume, you cannot be sure whether the machine, it will do everything. And what we found was, when you do the first batch, the first couple of batches will not be as the middle one.
Right.
So what we tend to do is to remove the first batch and deal with the second batch. Then the first batch, we call it trial, and then we leave it there. We don't release it to the market.
Market, okay. Yeah. So that's a learning. You know, when I first met you, and this is like for me the acid test with entrepreneurs, is that almost always they go to the boot of their car and bring product. Almost always. That's like, for me, it's like, that's the acid test. If the entrepreneur doesn't have product with them, I'm like,
what are we doing?
But the worst part for me, and I've had to learn this as a chef as well, is because I'm in the food and beverage space, that means I get to test and taste a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the one guy just rocked up, like, I've never met this guy. Pulls out a PET bottle from a cooler box and says, you got to taste this stuff. And it's some brown liquid. I'm like, oh, my goodness. But your taste, because, I mean, if that guy is that passionate, he's walking around everywhere.
Look, your product is your weapon.
Right.
And you have to be ready for whatever opportunity that is.
Because you never know, right?
That's it, you know? And if you cannot have your product around any given moment, how do you then, because you're an entrepreneur, you are 24 hours. You know, you don't close down like your 9 to 5.
Yeah, we work 80 hour weeks.
I mean, I'm here now.
You're right. And it's the third of the year.
That's it. It's your weapon. And that's what I call it your right to walk.
Would it be nice if you
had
brought us some drinks? So I'm just saying, hashtag.
Wow, thanks.
But I was speaking to a senior executive at Coca-Cola, and he said something interesting to me. He said, you know, Miles, like, you know, 15, even 5 years ago, right? Coca-Cola would just, you know, produce along, right? Global behemoth that they are. And is, you know, life is good. Wherever you go in the most remote of areas, you'll find a fridge and it's got a Coca-Cola product in it, right?
Mm.
He says, you know, in the last 3 years, a 25-year-old is now a competitor.
Yeah.
Think about that. That means for the first time in our history of living memory, a company that's like 200 years old has a chance to be displaced by a 25-year-old with vision.
Yeah.
You know, because now all of a sudden, anybody can think to themselves they can be a big beverage company, and you're proving it.
I tell you what it is for me. Okay, first of all, I don't say the C word. in our company, the C word is literally a swear word, as well as the A word. We don't say those two words.
Okay.
And we never, ever, ever go to a customer and explain our product and say the A word or the C word.
Right.
Because literally you're giving them a thought of trying to compare your product and so on.
Mm.
And I think they are one of the biggest companies that I really admire.
Mm-hmm.
And they created a product, not even a product, a range.
Right.
You know, that is out there in the market. But they forgot to be in touch with the consumer. Hence why companies such as ourselves, Skyroll Drinks, we found a gap where they're lacking. And I think one of the key thing is to be in touch with the consumer.
Mm.
When you introduce a range and you don't know what the consumer wants, you're just relying on you've created a brand and you're going to feed them a $14.99 or $12.99 and you just spin it with a cool advertisement.
Right.
And you forget that the economy changes as well.
And
as
people change.
People change.
Right.
You know? And you're going to get a lot of rebellion within your own consumer. You know?
I see now the C guys are focusing on the, what do they call them? The people, I'm at 2000.
Ah.
Yeah. But again, I'm not going to focus on the C people.
Let me tell you.
Because I do think they're going down that strategy because they've realized that, hang on, there's a whole new generation that is not as sold.
Let me tell you, the new generation literally has a way and a choice on how they consume products. If it's not cool, if it does not meet their needs. Remember
authentic.
That selling to a consumer, sales 101, you have to sell them a need versus a feature.
Mm.
You know, gone are those days when the C people have literally sell a feature.
Mm.
Hence why today they've literally increased their range where they've say,
zero
we've got
light,
a zero this, we've got no caffeine that, and so on.
Features.
You know what I mean? Those were things that they never even thought of. Mm. But the consumer literally evolves.
Right.
You know, and when you don't change with the consumer and literally find ways to literally adapt every day, you literally find that the consumer is walking ahead of you and you are behind.
Mm.
And when you look ahead, Skyroll is there in front. It's right. Closing that gap.
But then they come to you and they say, hey, Sammy,
we
got this big check with a lot of zeros in it. Lots and lots of zeros.
Yeah.
What does one do? Do you sell out?
Okay, so we need to go to the drawing board.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll
come
tell
on.
Why.
Give
I'm,
us the top.
I'm going to go there. I'm going to go there eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to go to the drawing board. And the reason why I'm going on the drawing board is a lot of entrepreneurs, they start a business, they don't understand what it is they're doing.
Mm.
Are you starting a lifestyle business or a company that will have shareholders listed on a JSE or you're going to have a franchise model or you're going to have a cool business where you just run it for 5 years, then you want investors to come in or you just want to sell it, you know? Then you literally have to be in touch with that core foundation why you started the business before you can even say, is the money, you know? And also what talks to me is, I wouldn't say no, I wouldn't say yes. What will be is the needs of the business. Remember, as an entrepreneur and as a director, I have to put what I think and my needs before the business.
Mm.
Does the business need a new partner that will literally emerge and take it to another level? If those boxes are yes, why not? You know, if you have a strategic partner that will literally enhance the vision or the dream, why not? You know, so I would, if that check is presented, why not?
Well, you know, I can sincerely say, I hope that day is closer than you think, because I do think we need the success stories, buddy. Yeah. Like, honestly, I think also as an entrepreneur, once you figure out how to do it once, you can almost always do it again, right? So there's that, right? Yeah. You might do something totally bigger and better, but you're also making sure that Tsepang or whoever can see that there's an upside. You can start something and exit. Now, as we wrap up, you know, you've told us your story and your journey growing up. What would you like to see happen in the entrepreneurial ecosystem in terms of, you mentioned some things like, you know, there was a funding thing, the educational side. And I do know that you and I also believe that you don't actually need a lot of capital to start. You just need to start, and almost always capital finds you when you've started. But I also find like simple things like personal finance, you know, no one gets taught that stuff. And if you don't know how to manage your personal finances, it is unlikely that you'll be able to manage your business finances. And those are the things that will ultimately derail or detract us in achieving our goal. Alternatively, because we're so passionate about product, we don't necessarily enjoy all the other back office support stuff, because we just love the product side. So with all of that, how would you make the entrepreneurial landscape better for the generation behind you that are looking at you from the lessons you've learned?
I think it has to be access. And I want to talk to two divisions here. I want to talk to the government, firstly.
Right.
And the second is your incubation support right there. And on the government side of things, I would love for them to catch up and to literally not sell us, you know, a story that literally becomes far-fetched for an entrepreneur to access.
But Sammy, they're saying they're putting up money. They're saying they're putting it in accelerators. They're saying, dude, there's money. Come and get it. There's industrialists.
If there's money that is there, you know, but an entrepreneur cannot access it, how good is that money? You have
Can you not access it?
It becomes almost times two harder to access that money than going to a bank.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because a bank will literally be a straightforward 2 days if you've got collateral, know?
Yeah.
You've got the money, right? But literally 90% of the entrepreneurs, they don't have collateral. They don't have good credit record. So it's relying on the government. And then on the government, you've got people that are employed by the government that know nothing about entrepreneurship. Literally, they take you through a journey of a red tape where they want that, then that frustrates the process. You find entrepreneurs like ourselves where we feel like the government is far-fetched. You know, they are not accessible. The money is there. You've announced on the budget, but literally you're not laying it down for an entrepreneur as to how is there 30 days, which you announce, but it becomes a year. You know, how does that happen? You know, therefore you find that newborn entrepreneurs die along the way, because you need to understand that there's two types of entrepreneurs. The first one will be those that are strong and they have the willpower to start from where they are, and those that are not having that willpower, they rely on, you know, I'm going to sell this house of mine, but I'm going to wait for the government. But they've got a cool product or they've got a cool project, you know. It does not literally exclude them from that ecosystem. And then you have an entrepreneur, as number two, who's starting their own business. They have no access, you know. We need your hubs where they can belong and learn and literally be taken through a journey of how to develop a business.
So you're saying, though, in your experience, it hasn't
been... I wish I had a mentor. I wish I had a hub where I can go to and literally sit and create the product. You know, I've had to spend 18 months. That 18 months could have been 3 months if I had a hub where I can go to and learn. But now you run out of funds because you don't have the equipment, then you have to wait up until you've got the next R2, and that creates the long cycle of you introducing this product. So all of those facilities, they literally give you an access or a backbone support for you to literally accelerate. And that talks to our economy being supported by entrepreneurship. Because I think we have to move away from the talk shops where we have lots of them. I mean, we're doing a eco-learning business experience this year. And part of that is to have masterclasses within that panel of speakers where entrepreneurs, they can literally learn.
But then government will saying that, but we're funding those things. We are there. It's because of us that those things exist, right?
Okay.
So, but your point is heard. You would like a more direct path to the capital.
That's it. But the government will always have a comeback, you know. But if you're looking at the rate of 30% of entrepreneurs that access that money or support, and versus those that don't really access. And that also go back to the understanding of the ecosystem. Not all entrepreneurs wake up and say, I'm going to create a product, then I understand, you know. And some of them, they literally need instant support and be taken through literally the journey and be held on.
And then you mentioned as your last parting shot, you were saying that you were going to look at this as each vertical. So yeah. Government was one. What was the others?
So the others will be the institutions as Wakanda. And I honestly believe that we need to move away from the institutions that are there because of they're ticking the government boxes.
Mm.
But we're needing those institutions that are run by entrepreneurs who understand, you know, what entrepreneurship is all about and what do they need, you know. Therefore, it's easy to support an entrepreneur. When an entrepreneur calls you at 8 o'clock and says, this is urgent,
you
understand exactly what they mean.
Right.
But if you're going to have an institution that's doing 8 till 9 o'clock,
right,
9 to 5, you know, how good
and
is
yet
that?
You as an entrepreneur working 12, 14 hours, right?
You're going nonstop. And I think also the private sector, we need to involve the private sector.
The challenge though in that, because I believe in what you're saying to be true, but there's not enough entrepreneurs that have sold to the C company that have made enough money that they can start these accelerators and be fully committed for 80-hour weeks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we need more of you to succeed so that you can be part of
and
the
what we need fair competition in SA.
Mm.
And I'll tell you why I'm saying this, right? When you have the C company has 25 billion of a grant or as a funding that you don't need to pay interest on as a loan or as a part grant, right? And then they discover that you're actually becoming a competition, then automatically they literally discount you from applying for that fund, right? And you need to have companies that are bold that, you know, we can either see this as a dream that connects into our company or we can ignore this as a competition that's going to die out, which is what's really happening right now, that there is fund that is privatized by the C company. And if you are in a beverage space, tough for you because you're not going to access a cent of that because you are seen as a competition. So,
which is very short-sighted because you could have been a new product range for them.
That's the thing, you know. I mean, look at the ecosystem.
So that's the private sector side. So that's now when you go into the private, that's the challenge you're seeing that needs to be fixed in that.
So you need to almost look at the private sector as a master. You know, and that master, they're not looking at themselves as a, we're going to give away X amount of money every year as part of our ED, and that's it. You know, they have to get their hands dirty and make sure that we've got winning stories that they can actually support all throughout the year. But if it becomes a, we've got this budget, we're only ticking our boxes because we want to be attractive for BEE status, it doesn't help anyone.
Because ticking boxes.
It goes back to, we're going to give that funding to all our friends.
Yes.
So the real people that need that money, they don't actually access the money.
So to summarize, Sammy, your last point would be fact that there's a lot of box ticking that's happening in the ecosystem. So it's not authentic. People are not doing it for the real desired outcome. They're just doing it because there's benefits that are short-term, whether it's tax, rebates, or BE points. It's not actually a business strategy. Because if it was, for all those three pillars you've mentioned, then it would, you know, if it's your business strategy, it's part of how you make revenue. It's not just a compliance thing.
Yeah.
Wow. Thanks so much, Sammy. I mean, I really appreciate your time being on a holiday, and yet here we
holiday.
Are.
Holiday. For who?
Thanks. I couldn't have said that differently myself. But I really genuinely appreciate your time, and we can only wish you nothing but success. We'll be watching, and I can't wait until you release your new product range and your book, of course. We can come and launch it here, and we look forward to it.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to another episode from the Solid Gold Podcast Studios.